So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to review.
By now, Gene Okerlund with Ravishing Rick Rude and Bobby the Brain Heenan.
Gentlemen, as you know, the ultimate warrior.
Nice. Fuck it.
Well, Jess, I tell you what, we have some tremendous events still to come, including that Intercontinental matchup right here during SummerSlam.
I don't know what happened to that Gene Okerlund back there, but somebody's chasing him down. I like that. It's about time that bald-headed old man got somebody to interrupt him and cause him trouble. All he does is cause trouble himself.
Welcome to Review Away. It's John Pollock, and I'm joined by Wei Ting. How are you doing today, Wei?
Pretty good. I'm doing okay.
I went and recounted today. I think this is show 100.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, wow. Well, not a very spectacular build, unfortunately.
No. But we're gonna. It would be silly to really go crazy for show number 100 when we've got, like, the two-year anniversary coming up in a month.
Yes, because that would be, what, like 106?
104.
104?
Yeah.
Yes. All right. Well, I guess we'll save it for then.
Yeah.
100 is just...
Yay. We're celebrating with Zeus.
Yeah. We'll celebrate our 600th or whatever Raw...
The longest-running wrestling podcast in history.
That's not true.
The Did You Know. Well, WWE's isn't true either.
Okay.
They're still the longest-running... They say now, do you notice how they tried to skirt around it by saying the longest running action adventure series? And now they're just like, fuck it. It's the longest running television show in history. That's all they say now.
Well, it's easier. Who's going to check, really?
Dave Meltzer will.
That's true. Well, they can get away with it.
So, SummerSlam 1989.
Yeah. Why were you hesitating there?
Oh, this
you
event.
You forgot what show we were reviewing?
I forgot this event while I was watching it.
Yeah.
Thought I put in a tape of a friggin' 1989 house show. This show was boring.
It actually was. I don't know if that was just me, because I don't know if you know, John, but like often when I watch these old shows, these are probably the toughest shows for me to watch throughout the week. And surprisingly, it's not Impact. It's some of these classic shows, because... I am always more interested in watching something when it's in its first run, when it has complete relevance and people everywhere are talking about it. But, you know, when I have to sit down and watch a three-hour pay-per-view from 1989 that nobody talks about anymore, it's hard to keep your interest many times.
So you gotta stop listening to certain people when they make requests. Some people request stuff to me. I'm like, oh, that's great. Just because you request it doesn't mean I'm going to sit through this.
It's not even just the, you know, this was, of course, a fan request, but I mean, not even just this one. I mean, even any of them, really.
I enjoy going back and watching some. Sometimes it's the best show I watch each week. I watch a shitty Raw, a shitty SmackDown, and a god-awful Impact. It's fun to pop in In Your House Canadian Stampede.
Oh, okay. Sure, I'm sure a lot of people feel the same way. I guess I'm more of a live TV type of guy.
So you hate doing this show?
No, I love it. Are you kidding me? It's great.
You hate the work that goes into it?
It's a bit of work sometimes, but it's just watching wrestling. It's not that much work. I'm just saying, I understand where you're coming from when you say that this particular show was boring, because I fell asleep through it many times.
It took me like 4 sittings to get through this show.
Yeah.
It was so boring.
I had to get up and walk to the park and sit down and then walk to my car and nap before I could come back and finish this show.
Wow, you just described like half the matches. That's how compelling your story was.
Yes.
Do you want to just chat about it now?
Okay.
SummerSlam 89.
Sure.
From East Rutherford, New Jersey at the Meadowlands Arena. And our announcer's way, Tony Schiavone, one of his few WWF pay-per-views. Yeah. And Jesse Ventura, this was the 1 year when he had left the NWA, and then he quickly went back to the NWA.
It's always odd to hear Tony Schiavone on a WWF broadcast.
And Jesse Ventura, who he'd later work with when he would jump to WCW.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, Tony Schiavone here, a very chubby Schiavone.
No.
They used here for SummerSlam, this was the second annual SummerSlam, and they used the Royal Rumble theme music here at this time for SummerSlam. And then they used it later, move it on to the Rumble. I always like this theme music for the Royal Rumble.
Yeah, it's a nice retro.
Yeah, nice.
Feel.
Yeah, it's like a Nintendo game music.
Sure.
And we then get a montage of wrestlers juxtaposed to summer activities.
Yes, like diving into a pool.
Riding a bike.
Eating ice cream.
Jumping in a pool.
I just said that.
You said, yes, diving in a pool. There was a woman at a lake.
There's a woman driving a convertible. A red convertible.
That's summer. That's summer to me.
It's basically a combination of the visuals.
And the best was this little child eating a watermelon, and then it went into a clip of Hulk Hogan hitting a man in the back with a chair.
Yes, a combination of summer and slam.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that's all they did.
Is that what they were going for?
They grabbed the tape with all the summer footage, and they grabbed the tape of the slam footage.
Slam. They just typed in slam on their typewriter.
And they jammed it all together in this thrilling video.
I was on the WWE conference call today, and they were talking about their tape library, and someone asked how many hours they have. Over 100,000 hours.
100,000 hours.
So someone did the math for me and sent it and said that would take 11.4 years to watch.
Wow, that's
11 years you could watch WWE programming nonstop.
And they keep making more. So.
It's crazy.
It's quite nice.
And only 30,000 of it have been digitized to HD.
Wow.
So really? That's a lot of intern work.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. It makes a good case for a TV station, should they ever decide to run one.
Just crazy. 11 years of content.
Well, how much of that is worth watching, though? How much of it is just straight up garbage?
You know what? There's wrestling fans are nuts. Maybe there's people out there who want to see job matches and stuff. Who knows? How much gold, though, is probably lost in there that people think is lost forever?
Probably a ton. Yeah, probably a ton.
Be a fun division to work in. So we then kick the show off with Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard, the Brainbusters, your tag team champions, accompanied by Bobby Heenan against the Hart Foundation. And they announced this is a non-title match on a pay-per-view.
A non-title match, but... if the Hearts lose, they won't have a title shot for 1 year.
That's what Jesse says. It could set them back a full year with a loss here.
Yeah.
Funny how that doesn't work in today's tag division.
Not at all. Could you imagine anyone caring this much about the tag team titles today?
When Otunga and McGillicuddy lose dark matches to guys clean.
Yeah.
Schiavone actually brings up saying, with an event of this magnitude, why wouldn't the titles be on the line? Probably asking this legitimately, and Ventura comes right back and says, well, because the Brainbusters were not the champions when the match was signed.
That makes sense.
Couldn't put pen to paper on a title defense.
Well, okay, but maybe a better explanation would be that the Hart Foundation weren't the number one contenders, or they hadn't earned the title shot yet. What about that concept?
Well, which begs the question, why are they fighting the champions?
Because this match was signed before they won the titles.
This is all foreign to me in 2011 booking.
Yeah.
So, Hart and Neidhart, they work on the left arm of Arn Anderson, and they keep them in their corner, and it was kind of strange, as Arn was here working for the hot tag, and the Harts were, like, playing the heels here, keeping them in their corner, and building to Arn tagging in Tully, but it was Arn and Tully that were the heels in this match.
Yeah.
It's really backwards.
It was a little backwards, but I think it ended up making sense, because I guess they're just going for the realism. Why does it always have to be the heels working for the hot tag? It worked for these two because the Hart Foundation was over enough that the fans were cheering them beating up the heels.
Well, the whole concept of a hot tag, though, is to build to a pop.
Mm-hmm. But this wasn't necessarily that. This was just the good guys beating up the heels, I guess. The hot tag would come later for the baby faces as well.
Blanchard made a comeback on Neidhart, and Neidhart just no-sold all of Blanchard's offense. Again, a heel tactic. The heels finally come in. They attack Brett, but he rolls through and sends the brainbusters to the floor. This gets a huge pop as the Hearts remain in the ring. Then Heenan is telling them that the titles are on the line, and Schiavone has to correct Heenan in what he is telling his team here. And then Neidhart and Anderson, they collide heads in the middle of the ring. Both are trying to make tags. Hart then hits a knee to the back of Arn as he runs the ropes from the apron. Then Brett's in. He attacks both of the heels. Then all four get in the ring, and Hart and Blanchard are Irish whipped into one another. Anderson and Neidhart end up on the floor fighting, and we see a slingshot shoulder block by Neidhart from the apron into the ring onto Blanchard. And Heenan then distracts the referee. Jim Neidhart picks Brett up, slams him onto Blanchard, and then Neidhart goes to Heenan while he is taking his focus away, and Arn hits a double axe handle to Bret Hart, who is on top of Blanchard, and then Arn pins Brett. They gave these guys almost 16 minutes here to start off the show. It was probably one of the better matches on this card, which was a pretty nothing card.
I thought it was the best match on the show.
Yeah, very well could have been.
I liked the match, and you know, despite how backward some of the things seemed, I liked how different it was. It was really the first time that I had seen, you know, babyfaces do so many heel tactics as opposed to the heel team, and for me it worked because, like I said, the babyfaces were over enough, and it just made the match seem more real. And the finish, you didn't mention that Arn was the illegal man.
Yeah, and he pins Brett.
So that, to me, set up perfectly a rematch without either team losing any steam.
But that really wasn't emphasized at the finish.
Sure they did.
Did they mention
it? Yeah, they did. Yeah, that Schiavone and Ventura mentioned it.
Gene Okerlund is with Dusty Rhodes, who's wearing a police cap in the back. Cuts a promo on the Honky Tonk Man and says he can dance circles around the Honky Tonk Man.
You picked that out? I could pick out only like two words from this whole promo.
Well, that's all I got from this.
I have no idea.
It was Dusty Rhodes being Dusty Rhodes.
No idea what he was saying.
That leads to our next match, the Honky Tonk Man with Jimmy Hart against Dusty Rhodes. And in this one, got to pull up my other side here. Both did like dance spots at the start of the match, and Honky Tonk Man takes a back body drop to the floor to avoid the elbow from Dusty. And then Dusty, his big spot here was messing up the hair of the Honky Tonk Man with his hand. It's a real dick move. If someone's ever done that to you, it's one of the most annoying things I think imaginable for someone. Someone just reaches over and messes up your hair. You're just so angry.
That'd be so rude. That'd be the equivalent. I mean, what's worse, getting slapped in the face or that? Having your hair messed up.
I'd take the slap over the rubbing your hand in someone's hair. Dusty Rhodes just does... One of the things I've always enjoyed about this guy is he does so little, but he always gets such a great reaction with it. I mean, just the slightest of offense, and it's great to watch this guy just work a crowd. Jimmy Hart grabs the foot of Dusty, and then Dusty chases Jimmy Hart back into the ring as Honky Tonk Man grabs the megaphone from Hart and hits Dusty in the midsection with the referee distracted, but Dusty kicks out. Crowd didn't care at all about this near fall.
Nope.
Then Rhodes goes on offense. He misses Honky Tonk Man in the corner and gets thrown into the referee by the Honky Tonk Man. And this did not cause a disqualification. But then Jimmy Hart grabs the guitar, comes in from the outside. He goes to hit Dusty, but he ducks, and Jimmy hits the Honky Tonk Man with the guitar shot. Dusty hits the bionic elbow, gets the win, 9 minutes and 41 seconds, and the crowd popped for the guitar shot, which Jimmy missed.
I thought this was a really boring match. This long reverse chin lock spot took up most of the match with Dusty
Dusty needs the right opponent.
Yeah, and he has tremendous charisma, don't get me wrong. And what you mentioned was exactly true, but in terms of a match, there is really nothing here.
They did some kind of concussion angle here where Sean Mooney goes to interview the Honky Tonk Man, who is just incoherent with what he's saying.
He thinks he's Elvis. And
he hit him so hard, he thinks he's another person.
Yeah.
Gene Okerlund is backstage with Demolition and Jim Duggan. They say they have a new outlook on life, And they're going to show some new things tonight against the Twin Towers and Andre the Giant, which after just watching this Honky Tonk Man Dusty Rhodes match, boy, was I not looking forward to this later in the evening. The Twin Towers and Andre the Giant against Demolition and Jim Duggan. Mm-hmm. So we go to our third matchup of the evening, Mr. Perfect against the man who was originally supposed to get that gimmick, Terry Taylor, the Red Rooster. Who won out on the gimmicks here, Way? Going from you're going to be Mr. Perfect to, well, we've got this other idea for you. You're going to be a chicken.
What was of note is that Mr. Perfect didn't get the entrance, but the Red Rooster got one. So perhaps they were pushing the Rooster over Mr. Perfect.
I did not get that from this match.
No. I can't believe this was a real gimmick. How can this be anything but a comedy gimmick?
Well, did you ever get to hear his promos where he actually had to do his sound effects as if he was a human rooster?
Even while he was selling in this match, he would do slight movements like his head would be like
he's
he would move his head like a chicken.
He's like a centaur.
Okay. Yeah.
He's like half human,
half
rooster.
Yeah.
He's just morphing. He's coming to life here. Like, how would you? This was human cockfighting. Perfect is out wrestling the Red Rooster. I can't even say that name seriously. Hits him with a bunch of suplexes, hits a fireman's carry. Rooster makes a comeback and goes for a body slam, but Red Rooster lifts up Perfect for a body slam, and Mr. Perfect does like the Andre the Giant spot where he lands on top of Rooster. It's like a big man spot for these two, 230-pound guys.
Well, he's got wings. He doesn't have arms, so the balance is all
what? Who booked the spot? Oh, Perfect hits a standing drop kick, sends Rooster to the floor. They fight on the floor. Just tosses Rooster back in the ring, hits the Perfect Plex, and gets the win. 3 minutes and 22 seconds. You paid for this match on this pay-per-view.
They had a lot of time to fill, it seemed, on this pay-per-view.
And that's what this pay-per-view felt like. We've got to fill time. Uh-huh. This felt like Superstars, a glorified edition of Superstars.
It really did. And we'll talk about this more at the end. But, I'm grateful that we got such a great slice of, past characters and past gimmicks. But there weren't many meaningful matches on this show.
Gene Okerlund is with Rick Rude and Bobby Heenan. And Rude says he's going to prove that Ultimate Warrior is the ultimate liar. And Heenan says they will break the rules to keep the title. And the Warrior is going to let down his fans. And he's not going to need face paint tonight because he's going to have black and blue on his eyes.
Did you make all this up?
No, that's what he said.
Are you serious?
Yeah, didn't you listen to the promo? So he's going to give him two black eyes. One's going to be black and one's going to be blue. So he won't need face paint.
Okay.
Because they're going to paint it for him with...
John,
a hematoma.
John, you obviously watched a very different version of this tape from me, because when I saw it, I was fully attentive. I saw Mean Gene Okerlund backstage with Bobby Heenan to one side and Rick Rude to the other. Mean Gene introduces these two. Then a sign falls down in the background.
Oh, this was that promo?
Mean Gene says, "Fuck it." This was that promo.
Oh, no!
This was the one moment worth watching this tape for. The greatest moment that will live on in wrestling history. Yeah.
This was that promo.
This was that promo.
I watched the WWE DVD.
Well, they must have redone it. And
It was years ago, they sent us the box set, and I kept one of them. So for SummerSlam, I have the WWE DVDs. I'm so disappointed I didn't watch that.
This is the classic.
So how did he recover from it?
They didn't. They just cut. They just cut to the.
They had they redid the promo clearly.
Obviously,
here.
They did.
I'm kind of glad we both watched to see that they actually fixed this. They redid a promo.
They redid the whole thing. But
But
they did it off camera. Yeah, they did.
Wow.
Fuck it. And actually, they didn't. Nobody saved it. They just cut back to a wide shot of the camera, and it was actually Ventura who finally commented about it, saying how, well, it's about time somebody, somebody screwed up that Mean Gene guy or something. Ventura was the one who actually saved it a little bit. But yes, this was that classic moment in wrestling history.
Oh, that's awesome. Next up, a six-man tag. The Rockers and Tito Santana against the fabulous Rougeau Brothers and Rick Martel, accompanied by Slick and Jimmy Hart. Jimmy Hart, I think, was out for every match.
Pretty much him or Heenan.
Him and Heenan.
Yeah.
The Rougeaus come out to the greatest theme music of all time.
I completely,
All American Boys.
Completely agree with you.
I love this theme song. The first time I heard it, it's my all-time favorite theme music.
Yeah, it's very good.
And it's even better with Jacques mouthing the lyrics on his way to the ring, and just he sings the whole song on the way there. Yeah. Just great.
I miss that. Why don't they do that these days?
I don't know, man, but this was like such a catchy tune. Like, this is a great pro wrestling theme song for heels.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know why they don't do that more often. Could you imagine, like, what is it? What's that guy's name?
David Otunga?
Yeah, David Otunga coming out, singing us one of his songs. Or his wife singing a song for him. Wouldn't that be awesome?
Jennifer Hudson?
Or Mason Ryan singing his theme song.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The Freemason.
Yes.
I don't know. Jacques, did you catch this at the beginning of the match, what he did to Rick Martel?
No. What did he do?
Rick Martel is wearing these trunks.
Uh-huh.
And Jacques goes to pat him on the ass.
Yeah.
But instead of just like slapping it, he took a big chunk of his ass, like just grabbed it and then shook it and like rubbed his hand. It was like 3 seconds of contact.
Oh, shit.
And Rick didn't fucking bat an eye. But Jacques like molested this man.
I don't know. I did not notice.
This was like the ass grab of all ass grabs.
Wow. I don't know. I did not.
So I didn't pay attention anymore to the match.
Maybe they were playing, some type of French gimmick, and maybe that's what they thought.
I have no clue.
French people did.
Martel will not get in the ring here to start because of Tito Santana. They did the breakup at WrestleMania earlier that year. Mm-hmm. Santana, really selling the split, is still wearing his Strikeforce boots.
Wow.
I think a wardrobe update was necessary after the tag team split. But it was a good story throughout the match. Martel was afraid of Tito and was just going to play the chicken shit throughout the match. And the babyfaces clear the ring right away, and they just do their big, weird babyface posing. Rockers and Santana were really solid here, and the crowd was into it right away. I really enjoyed this match, first of all. Raymond. He comes in, and he did this awesome spot, just an awesome heel spot. He kicks Marty right in the gut, and as Marty's selling, Ramon does this, like, douchebag look to the baby faces and just yells, "What? What? Like, what the fuck are you going to do about it? I just kicked your boy in the gut." Just a great spot. I rewound it and watched it.
That's
cool. I think I enjoyed every worker in this match, because they were all just great for their little role here.
Mm-hmm.
And Martel leaps over Jannetty in the corner. He celebrates the most arrogant heel for this leap spot. And then Jannetty tags Santana, and Martel just tags out right away. Then the heels got the heat on Santana for 18 hours.
Yeah.
Tito just sold here, while the Rockers just waited for the hot tag. You had Martel come in like the coward who would stomp on Santana and then tag out if he showed any signs of life. Santana tried to fight back, but as he would climb over, they would just pull him across into the heel corner.
I thought it worked really well.
Me too. I say he was selling forever, but it was effective.
Yeah, you could really feel the struggle for
it was Santana. Like every time he came so close, I'm like, when they tag one of the Rockers, this place is going to go apeshit.
Mm-hmm.
Ramon applied the Boston Crab, and then Jacques sneaked in with a knee to the back. Earl Hebner basically had to play blind here because the heels so blatantly interfered here, and Earl Hebner had to play like the dumbest referee in history. Santana then blocked an O'Connor roll by Martel, but then Jacques is in, and Santana and him meet mid-ring with a double cross body, and Ventura says that how Tito almost pulled one out of his Mexican hat there. And then they do a double team spot with the Rougeaus, but Jacques runs knee first into Raymond, missing Santana, and Tito finally tags in Shawn Michaels. Huge pop, and then Michaels presses Jannetty onto Martel. Jacques comes in, accidentally elbows Martel, and then gets taken out by the flying forearm by Tito. Martel gets hit with the flying forearm, and then Jannetty is knocked into Jimmy Hart by Rougeau. He reverses an O'Connor roll, and Jannetty is pinning him, but the referee is distracted, and then Martel comes up, Dex Jannetty with a forearm, and Martel steals the victory. This went 15 minutes, and I thought this was a great match.
Yeah, I thought it was really good, too, especially I thought that heat spot lasted most of the match, and it was very effective. For me, though, it kind of fell apart for the finish.
There's a lot of guys involved, and it was like, the illegal man getting the pin, which we had just seen.
Yeah, it was the same finish, and this time, I don't think the announcers even tried to make it clear about who the legal man was.
I still enjoyed this match quite a lot. I enjoyed it a bit more than the tag match earlier. Then we get a recap for the Ultimate Warrior feud with Rick Rude, and they go back all the way to the Royal Rumble at the Super Pose Down between Warrior and Rude, and it shows Rude attacking him with a power bar. Then Rude won the Intercontinental title at WrestleMania with Heenan holding down Warrior's legs. Then they shot an angle on Primetime where Warrior beat Haku, and then Rude attacked him with a pile driver, and then Warrior made this shitty comeback, ending with a press slam of Rude onto Andre on the floor, and Andre just stumbles over trying to catch Rude. And then they did another angle where Rude was trying to get this female fan to kiss him, and Warrior came in and attacked, and it led to Warrior chasing Rude to the entrance, and then Andre came out and choked out Warrior.
This was like a 10-month long feud.
Yeah, well, this would have been August, so like 8 months.
Yeah, did they just start it at the Rumble, or did
maybe earlier? Before? Yeah, so even longer, perhaps.
It seemed really hot from the little recap that they showed.
And then we got an Ultimate Warrior promo, just as crazy as any Ultimate Warrior promo is.
Classic just Warrior.
All I want from Warrior. I would hate for this guy to come out and play Nick Bockwinkel.
That'd be terrible.
You want Ultimate Warrior to be Ultimate Warrior.
Could you imagine if he finally made his return to the WWE?
And they tried to script him?
Oh, they wouldn't try to script him, but I'm positive. Like, by this point, he's known for these crazy, weird promos. They would just tell him to come out and do one of these, and the place will go nuts.
He does them on YouTube.
Yeah, as nonsensical as possible.
So that takes us to Rick Rude against Ultimate Warrior, Rude defending the Intercontinental Championship. Rude cuts a promo in the ring, and he's wearing Ultimate Warrior tights, his spandex. He's got the Ultimate Warrior's face paint on it.
Oh, I didn't notice.
Warrior got a very big reaction coming out. Crowd was going insane at the start of this match for Warrior on offense. It was just all Warrior. Hit a press slam to the floor. There was a vertical suplex on the floor. Ventura is just going insane here over Schiavone ignoring Warrior's blatant disregard of the rules.
Yeah.
And Ventura was saying, hey, if it was Rude cheating, you'd be all over him.
Well, Warrior actually hit Rude with a belt. He gave him a belt shot. I don't know why, but Jesse was absolutely right for calling for a DQ.
It's what I always loved about Jesse. He called it like a shoot.
Absolutely. And Schiavone tries to justify it, saying, it's okay, it's outside of the ring.
Yeah.
And then Jesse just like goes, freaks out on Schiavone. So he's like, what are you saying, Schiavone? You can shoot someone as long as it's outside of the ring? And he calls Schiavone stupider than Monsoon. Ventura was just so good on this whole show.
It's such a difference watching Ventura when he was so motivated in WWF and compared to when he clearly wasn't in WCW. Mm-hmm. It was just such a different Jesse Ventura.
Mm-hmm.
It's all Rick Rude selling here, which is probably for the betterment of the match. Warrior mocked Rick Rude's pose, and then he lifts Rude and drops him on his ass in the ring. And then Rude cuts Warrior off on the top rope, and then Rude here gets the heat on Warrior, and we see him apply a version of the camel clutch, works over the back of Warrior. Then as he's going for the Rude Awakening, Warrior powers out of it by stopping Rude's hands from being applied, and then it's into a sleeper spot by Rude, but Warrior again fights it and gets away. They run into each other in mid-ring, and it knocks out referee Joey Morella, and then Rude is delivering these shots, and Warrior's no-selling them. Warrior comes back with a back body drop, a series of clotheslines, and then a power slam, but the referee is still out, and this leads to Rude hitting a pile driver, and the ref finally comes over, but Rude gets his, Warrior hits Rude, I believe, with the pile driver, mm-hmm. and then Rude gets his foot on the rope to break up the count. And then, Rick Rude fights back, and he lifts up Warrior, and I thought, wow, he's going for a power bomb. He hit a version of the Gonzo Bomb on Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah, this was strange.
Holy fuck.
I don't know if there was just some miscarriage.
This had to be a fuck-up.
Oh, yeah.
There's no way they booked this spot.
Oh, yeah.
In a late 80s WWF match. I mean, it was... I would have been amazed if they did a powerbomb spot. This had to have been a fuck-up.
It was meaningless. Like, the crowd didn't really react because they didn't really know what this move was supposed to be. And the landing looked messy as well.
Could have killed Warrior here.
Could have. Yeah.
Anyway, he follows up the Gonzo Bomb by climbing to the top rope and hitting a flying fist.
Is this just some weird diving?
I was almost positive Warrior was supposed to get out of the way. Because this looked like one of those where either a guy gets his knees up, or because you can always see when a guy jumps off the top, and you're just thinking, if he were to land this, he's completely awkward. His body is expecting knees or a guy getting out of the way. And that's what Rude looked like. Mm-hmm. And it just seemed to me like at the last second, he's like, fuck, he's not out of the way. What can I do? Fist.
Yeah, yeah.
It just seemed like the most ridiculous spot.
It's like he's in midair and he's thinking, what can I do? I'm going to put my fist here.
And land knees first off the top rope. So this was weird.
Yeah.
And then Roddy Piper makes his way down to ringside. Roddy Piper was retired at this point, but doing cameos for the company. And Piper leans over and moons Rick Rude. He's wearing like a thong or something. And this leads to Rick Rude being distracted, and he's so angry at this. And while he's distracted by Piper, Warrior hits a German suplex to Rick Rude off the second turnbuckle. Mm-hmm. I was convinced somebody here was going to get paralyzed. If I had been watching this live, I would have been so concerned. If I was Rick Rude, the last guy I'm letting hit a German on me from the second rope is this fucker.
It was mostly Rude, you know, taking it. Like, it was mostly Rude.
I don't care. That guy was just reckless with people. He could have just overthrown him or something and just thrown him at an angle. Holy crap. So then Rude hits a pile driver. There's a kick out by Warrior, and then Warrior does his big comeback, a running shoulder block, press slam, and then splashes him on the back, covers him 16 minutes and 3 seconds. Ultimate Warrior wins the Intercontinental title. Mm-hmm. I always thought Rick Rude was like Warrior's best opponent and the guy that knew how to work to Warrior's very, very limited strengths. Mm-hmm. And I thought Rick Rude was the story of this match. This was all him. Yeah. Warrior is a horrible, horrible worker. When you just watch this guy, it's just like, man, he was just so awkward.
But you definitely wouldn't be able to tell that much from watching this match. This was probably one of his best matches.
Probably was. And the following SummerSlam, actually, it was when Warrior, they put the title on him, and it was Rick Rude that they put on the road with him, and they'd actually worked the following SummerSlam as well together. So, I mean, Rick Rude was a huge help to the Ultimate Warrior. And this match, I thought this was a pretty good match for Ultimate Warrior standards.
Yeah, agreed. After the win, they cut to a shot of Sean Mooney in the crowd.
What a job this guy had.
Yes, yes. But nonetheless, I thought it was a very nice touch. There are just people celebrating all around him. It made this win seem like a huge deal.
Yep. He talks about how loud it is in the audience. And this was the big push for Warrior, who was going to be headlining WrestleMania the next year with Hogan. Gene Okerlund is in the back, and he welcomes Mr. Perfect Kurt Hennig. Calls him by his real name.
I didn't notice.
Yep.
Did, huh?
And they spend more time talking about his match with the Red Rooster than the match actually was. He basically says, no one beats Mr. Perfect. And then Piper walks in for an interview. He tells a bunch of ass jokes. And he says he's going to get Rude tonight. He's going to get Rude tonight.
And what else did he say here?
I don't know. This was as incoherent as Ultimate Warrior.
He said he was going to watch the show, have a beer, and eat a garage. That's what I heard. He says he's going to eat a garage.
Did you think I was going to let you get away with that? Got a bit of a rep myself, you know. Got a little reputation that I got to uphold. You think I ain't dealt with gorillas like you before? It's been wonderful to see you. Couple of things I'm going to do. I'm going to eat a garage. And I'm going to watch some more of these matches. And, gonna get Rude.
Oh, fuck. Then, the weirdest part of the show, Ronnie Garvin, rugged Ronnie Garvin, walks in a suit. And he says he has a special assignment tonight. And then he walks off. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Ronnie Garvin. Glad we could see you tonight. And then Bobby Heenan walks in. He's completely irate. And then Rick Rude follows in, complains about the interference. And he says that Piper showed his ask Bobby what happened. Because I guess they couldn't say ass. So they thought they were so clever. Piper showed his Ask Bobby what happened. And Heenan cuts this crazy, crazy promo. Heenan was just great with these. And they were just irate at the officiating and being screwed out of this title. And they're going to take it to Jack Tunney.
As weird as some of the promos were on the show, for the most part, I loved all these backstage segments with Mean Gene. Everybody could talk. Well, almost
everyone had a different character.
Yeah, everybody had a different voice. And everything came from the heart, you know? Like, not once did it seem like anybody was acting.
Very true. And then we go to our next matchup, another six-man tag. It's the Big Boss Man and Akeem, collectively known as the Twin Towers, teaming with Andre the Giant, and of course they have managers, Bobby Heenan and Slick, taking on Jim Duggan and Demolition. And Duggan was wearing American face paint to join Demolition. And then we see the match start off with Axe caught in the heels corner. Andre was just so immobile at this point. I mean, he could barely get around, much less work any kind of match, so he was extremely limited. Smash gets the hot tag. They deliver a series of body slams to the Twin Towers, with Smash slamming both Bossman and Akeem. Andre did his trademark, like, hair butts, where he grabbed someone by the hair and headbutted the back of their head. And that was his big high spot of the match. And basically, Akeem came off the second rope to splash Smash, but after he hit the splash, Duggan hit him with the 2x4, and then Smash just rolls over on top of Akeem and pins him after taking this splash. 6 minutes, 43 seconds. Nothing match.
This is one of those really boring matches. Really, really boring. But if you're a fan of these guys, which I'm sure many people would be, then that's all. That's all you need.
More backstage interviews, this time with Ted DiBiase and Virgil. DiBiase says that Jimmy Snuka is primitive, eating coconuts and bananas. And he's going to be, quote, another wrestling statistic.
A primitive native.
A primitive native.
Yeah.
So then, Howard Finkel announces the special ring announcer for the next match, Ronnie Garvin. In perhaps the worst ring announcing job in history, introduces Hercules and then cuts the shittiest promo for Greg Valentine's intro, which included a guy who can't tell if he's coming or going and is overweight by 30 pounds. And he went over these lame, lame insults.
Here is a man who says he's from Seattle, Washington. He claims he weighs 249 pounds. To me, he looks like he's overweight by 30 pounds.
How dare him do that as an announcer?
This individual who can't think for himself. And when he goes to his wimpy manager for advice, little Jimmy can't give him any. He is the only wrestler
I've
ever seen
a punk
with two left feet.
Well, he's talking
Where's
a lot.
Where's a robe with cheap rhinestone?
Oh, boy, he's really kidding.
Can't tell if he's coming or going.
Listen to this.
Made the biggest mistake of his life when he asked for me to be reinstated. Greg the Hammer Valentine.
Oh, this was bad.
I thought it was funny. Yeah, they were lame, but I thought they were supposed to be lame.
I guess.
I thought it was supposed to seem like this, you know, this troublemaker who just grabbed the mic and was saying all these things unprepared.
Like, what's that mean? Doesn't know if he's coming or going. Is that an insult?
Yeah, it means he's so dumb.
I'm here. No, I'm leaving. Whoops. Oh. So Valentine is distracted by Garvin at ringside, which begged the question, if that was the big feud, why wasn't that match happening on this show? It's not like he had a pay-per-view the next month.
This was his return. This was his big return.
From what?
Well, wasn't he away? Wasn't he Ronnie Garvin, wasn't he away before this?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Suspended or let go or something?
Oh, okay. To me, that was the feud. Why weren't we doing this feud on the pay-per-view?
They were building that feud.
For what? The Survivor Series?
I would guess so.
They did all elimination matches at that.
Oh, for something else then.
For TV?
Mania.
Valentine is distracted by Garvin at ringside. He goes for the figure four, but Hercules blocks it. They battle back and forth. Hercules hits a vertical suplex. And then Valentine is in the corner, and he gets on top and just simply puts his feet on the ropes, pins him at 3 minutes and 4 seconds. So Garvin has to announce the winner and says, "As far as I'm concerned, the winner of this match, Hercules." No one cared about this feud at all. So then Garvin has to apologize and says, "I was misunderstood. The winner of this match by disqualification is Hercules." Valentine is so angry. "Pronounce me as the winner." And Garvin gets knocked to the floor by Valentine, takes off his suit, and then fires back with Hercules as Valentine exits to the floor and he's held back by Jimmy Hart. What a segment this was.
I thought this announcer gimmick was so funny, man. Here's a guy who has absolutely no business with a microphone, and he's just saying whatever's off the top of his head to cause trouble.
If ever there was an argument in favor of scripted promos, Ronnie Garvin was it on this show.
I thought the fact that it went so awkwardly helped this gimmick.
A man who doesn't know if he's coming or going.
In the 50s, that would have been an insult.
Maybe this was designed to be a terrible promo to lead into something great, and we would get the comparison, because next we got Randy Savage, Sensational Sherry, and Zeus surrounding a cauldron with smoke coming up in this dimly lit room with, like, a red backlight.
Light coming out of the cauldron.
Just from an aesthetic point of view, Way. I mean, how great did this look?
This looked like a pretty interesting after-school
here's
Halloween special.
Three people just around a cauldron. Some people might think this was the campiest thing ever. I thought it was the greatest thing ever. And Sherry looks into the cauldron and she can see the future and talks about how they are going to destroy Hulk Hogan and Brutus Beefcake. This was like a fucking nursery rhyme or something. And these were the evil bad guys that were going to slay the heroes. Mm-hmm. And I just loved this promo.
I like this a lot.
It was so fun.
It was very creative and very different from their usual. And I think that's, you know, that marks this area of the WWE. It's just fun and campy.
And to think that I'm just, you know, being nostalgic here, if Kane did this promo next week, I would enjoy it just as much if he was in front of a cauldron with smoke coming up.
I don't know. I don't know if I'd agree.
I have a soft spot in my heart for Kane.
For cauldrons?
Yes, both. Okay. Next up, Ted DiBiase and Jimmy Snuka in the most racist matchup of the evening. Both these people, their kids are in the WWE today.
Yes, that's right.
Doing much, much worse than these two were.
What's the update on Jimmy's? Oh, Tamina, that's right. Is she still there?
Yeah, she's still there, Way. She's in the Battle Royal on Monday.
I couldn't tell. I couldn't tell if her or DiBiase are still around.
Two men that were also a big part of All Japan Pro Wrestling in the early 80s.
Oh.
Yep.
Didn't know that.
And Ventura calls Snuka an animal who can't be trained, and he can be outsmarted. Hmm. He's an animal come to life. And Snuka does a leapfrog, no problem. But then his back is towards DiBiase, and he goes for another leapfrog where he can't get enough height, and DiBiase runs into the back of his ass, and Snuka lands on top of DiBiase.
And they just crumble.
Ooh. But this gave some cred to the girl isn't tough enough.
But Ventura, again, did his best to salvage it, saying how it benefited Snuka anyway, because Snuka ended up landing in a dominant position.
If you remember, it was the Night of Champions pay-per-view back in 2007, and they did this Legends match where it was, it was Snuka's son. Oh, what was his name?
Sam.
I can't remember his name. Deuce and Domino. Yeah. I think it was Deuce and Domino, and they took on, I think it was Jimmy Snuka and maybe Sergeant Slaughter. I can't remember, but Snuka tried a leapfrog spot, and oh, it was horrible.
Really?
Yeah, so it made me think of this.
Whose son is, who was that guy that was in Legacy? Manu.
Manu!
Whose son is he?
Oh, he was, let me look it up. Because we're going to get spammed by people. Manu, he was, was he someone's son or was he just part of the family? WWE. Oh, he was Afa Anawahi Jr. So he was And what relation was he to the, was he Offa's kid?
Yeah, Offa. Yeah. All right. Anyway.
That was Manu, who we've never heard of since. So, anyway, Ventura says that Snuka doesn't have a strategy. It's animal instinct that he goes by. Snuka goes on offense until he runs into a guillotine on the top rope by DiBiase and then works on the back of Snuka. Misses a second rope back elbow drop to Snuka on the floor. And then Snuka hits a headbutt, goes to the top rope, but Virgil gets on the apron. And Snuka chases Virgil around. And Ventura points out, making another animalistic decision to go after Virgil. And then DiBiase comes off the apron to the back of Snuka, sends Snuka into the steel post, and then DiBiase returns to the ring. Snuka is counted out at 6 minutes and 26 seconds, and then after the match, Snuka attacks DiBiase from behind, drops him to the floor, and then lays out Virgil, hits the top rope splash. Another pretty nothing match.
Yeah, yeah, just more filler, really.
Sean Mooney is in the nosebleed seats as fans are touching him awkwardly. He looked pretty annoyed. And then Shivani says, "We are moments away from the moment we've been waiting for." Oh. Oakland is with Hulk Hogan and Brutus Beefcake. This was a weird Hogan promo. They talk about riding motorcycles, and then Hogan discusses these long legs being wrapped around him with big headlights.
Well, he's alluding to the surprise that was to come. But it sounded much creepier than that.
So this was to indicate that the woman who showed up was like...
Yeah.
Dry humping him on his motorcycle?
I guess so. That's in line with...
With big headlights.
He said that.
That's a really creepy promo, man.
Yeah, it was a creepy
promo. Yeah, that's what he said.
Ugh, very and then weird. What does Beefcake say?
What did Beefcake he say? I can't stand listening
Beefcake
to him.
Beefcake cuts a promo.
Oh, about his shears.
About his shears and how they're...
The blades. He's like, I love the blades.
I love the blades. They're a part of me, and I'm going to make them a part of you.
Also
Savage.
Creepy.
Yeah.
All right. So they recap the feud, including how life imitated art on the set of No Holds Barred. And they show Saturday night's main event from May of that year. It was the first appearance of Zeus, where Hogan came out for his cage match with Boss Man, and Zeus was standing on the steps, which was actually a deliberate device just to make Zeus look really big. They put him on those steps so that he towered over Hogan. I love hearing about little things like that. Their attention to detail was incredible at one point. Mm-hmm. And Savage then, they show him introducing Zeus on the Brother Love Show as the human wrecking machine. And then says, this was actually great, because Savage yells, make a date and don't be late. And then they handed the mic to Zeus, who just cut this promo. Like, it was completely monotone and pronounced every syllable. Like, he was just literally a machine talking. He was not human. I enjoyed this. And it was even better because in the latest Zack Ryder video, they have Chris Masters cut a promo on him to challenge him for the internet wrestling title. Mm-hmm. And he tells Zack right at the end, make a date and don't be late.
Oh, is that right?
So they also show Zeus no-selling a chair shot from Hogan. And Hogan's facials here were great, just selling the fear of this man who cannot be destroyed. And Zeus is challenging both Beefcake and Hogan, who are holding chairs, and really got Zeus over as this monster here.
Mm-hmm.
So a great job in promoting him. Unfortunately, he did have to wrestle, and that was on tap here.
That was the challenge. How do you... You've done a great job promoting this guy as this man that's more powerful than anybody on your roster. How do you maintain that illusion in the ring?
For no good reason, the genius cut a promo before this match.
Yep.
And then we go to Hulk Hogan and Brutus Beefcake against Randy Savage and Zeus, who have Sensational Sherry in their corner. They have a stare down, and then Finkel announces that Miss Elizabeth is here, who comes down to ringside for the baby faces. So we're to believe that Hogan's fucking this woman. Based on that promo.
Based on that promo, yep.
So Beefcake tosses Savage out by Zeus, who no-sells anything from Hogan. Zeus cannot be picked up for a body slam. He chokes Hogan on the ground. Very, very basic offense. Savage does all the work here, mm-hmm. and Zeus would just come in for, like, a bear hug spot.
Yep.
It's like, what can you do? Well, I can clasp a man with my hands.
Yeah. Well, perhaps that was the best thing.
All you could do.
They wouldn't even let him do a body slam. It would completely expose him.
Savage runs into the ropes and misses Hogan. Then he misses two elbow drops, and Hogan makes the hot tag to Beefcake, if ever there was a backwards way to book a match. Then we see Beefcake apply a sleeper onto Zeus, but Savage breaks it up, hitting Beefcake with Sherry's purse. Beefcake is then selling, then builds to a hot tag for Hogan. Hogan hits a big boot to Savage, and he goes to the floor. Then he goes for a vertical suplex on the apron, but Sherry yanks the leg of Hogan. We see a top rope elbow delivered by Savage to Hogan, but he stands right up and no-sells the elbow drop, hits an atomic drop that sends Savage to the floor, and then Zeus is in as the legal man. Hogan attacks Zeus and gets him to one knee, and then clocks him with Sherry's purse, and then body slams Zeus, hits the leg drop, and pins Zeus. 15 minutes and 11 seconds. Not a great match, but I will say the crowd was pretty hot for the finish here of seeing Zeus sell, and it seemed like they had no confidence of getting any kind of legs out of Zeus and just beat him here in this match.
They ended up continuing this feud in a rematch.
They would do a cage match, but he would never do another pay-per-view.
I actually enjoyed this match because I really was impressed at how they protected Zeus and kept that fantasy alive. Simply, you know, the drama surrounding Zeus taking a knee at the end there was really good, and it worked really well. The crowd was totally with it. At the end of this, Beefcake and Liz cut Sherry's ponytail.
Yes.
That's mean. That's very mean.
Yeah.
You don't do that to a woman.
Yeah, not very, they cut her hair off completely here. I am mistaken here. Zeus did work the Survivor Series that year, so he did return.
Good catch.
I always try, because I know people will grab him if I don't. So yes, they cut her hair. This is after Sherry gets hit by an atomic drop from Hogan, and Elizabeth slaps Sherry, and then Hogan grabbed the shears and threatened to stab the heels with them. What a prick. Beefcake then cuts off the ponytail. The baby faces celebrate. And then Shivani calls it the greatest moment in sports. The greatest night in history. And that's SummerSlam 89. God awful boring show.
It wasn't god.
No, you're right. It wasn't horrible, but it was just slow at times. I really enjoyed that six man with the Rougeaus and Martel against Santana and the Rockers.
That was a good match.
I thought Rick Rude was the MVP of this show. Sure. What he got out of Warrior, I was blown away by. You're right. I can't say it got awful, but I'll give this one a 3.5 out of 10.
Really? Low?
Yeah. It was, you know, this was a filler show.
Yes.
Especially if I had paid $30 for this. Well, I got non-title matches. I got squash matches.
Well, I am judging this show based on my experience watching it now, and like I usually do, and I like watching this era of WWE TV just because the roster was really good, I thought, at this time. Their gimmicks were so weird and great. The promos were fun. Ventura was fantastic. Even though there was filler, it at least, you know, you got the entrances, and I guess those made the show worth watching. This had the fuck it promo from Mean Gene, and some good matches and some great heat throughout too. So I give this about a 7 out of 10.
Holy crap, 7 way.
Yeah.
My God. You're right. The characters during this time, for whatever you'll say about the work rate at this time, the characters were just so great. Mm-hmm. And just something that you kind of miss right now. And I guess a lot of these characters couldn't play to today's audience, but I just enjoyed the uniqueness where every character had their own voice. They sounded like their character and they knew their characters, which is a big, big gap in today's product.
Absolutely.
So there we go, everyone. That was SummerSlam 1989. I was just about to wrap up and forgot our favorite segment, Wade, and that's feedback. Because we've got to know what people said about this show. Do you have yours loaded up?
I do have mine.
Then you kick us off.
Blaine Vandergren. I actually thought the Rude Warrior match was the best of the night. Of course, Rick Rude had to carry it, but it was certainly one of Warrior's best matches.
I'd agree with that.
The opening tag match was great as well. As for the main event, I didn't care for the no-holds-barred angle going into it. The best part was Lanny Poffo's poem. But the sad thing is, I think more people will know Tiny Lister as Zeus than any other character he's played. He was a memorable character in Friday, and I still remember his cameo in The Dark Knight. but this was one of the worst celebrity angles I can remember. And it was actually around this time that I started watching wrestling, so I do kind of cringe every time a celebrity angle is used.
Yeah, this was a case of taking someone with zero physical talent in the ring and see how much can this WWF marketing machine create somebody. And, you know, up until that first match, they got one pay-per-view out of him that he was, I think, a draw. And it was after that, I think, it's tough to sustain somebody like that, you know? Alexander Rios. I've never seen this show in my whole life other than some snippets on YouTube a few nights ago, which, to be perfectly honest, I'm not even sure is the right one. Is this Hogan and Brutish Beefcake teaming up? If Hogan was champion, why wouldn't he defend the belt? Anyway, reading up on this show gives me a bittersweet feeling, as I would love to hear who Pollock would nominate for the Putski Award, and also the sad realization that so many of the talents on this card have died. Well, keep up the great work, John and Way. Your podcasts make my nights more entertaining. Putski Award on this show. Fuck. You know, Rick Rude was, like, insane at this point, but he was sharing the ring with Jim Hellwig.
Mm-hmm.
Zeus was a pretty scary dude, physique-wise.
Let me see who else you had here. Physique-wise, yeah, I mean, I think Rude, Warrior,
I'd say Warrior. It's just so hard not to go with Rick Rude, with Ultimate Warrior.
Congratulations, Ultimate Warrior.
You are the winner.
Another Scott Putski Award. All right. Next, we have Kenny Soto. The thing that really stands out to me about SummerSlam 1989 is the incredible talent that the WWF had in the tag team division. Brainbusters, Heart Foundation, Demolition, The Rockers, The Rougeaus, The Twin okay, maybe not The Twin Towers, but damn, any one of these teams would be by far the best tag team in the WWE today. More than that, they were great workers. You really cared about the team. More than that, they were great workers. You really cared about the team. These days, I can't even name the tag team champs. It's amazing how things have changed.
Eddie Miguez. I like this show best of the first three SummerSlams. I remember Jesse making a Jason Voorhees analogy of the already ridiculous crown-wearing King Hacksaw Duggan and the most ridiculously awesome fat guys team of Andre, Akeem, and Bossman opposing him. Throw in the one and only meeting, I believe, of the Harts and Tully and Arn, plus the Rockers and Rougeaus, and the undercard was so much better than the year before. Rick Rude and Mr. Perfect really started to hit their stride around this time in the WWF as well. The main event was what it was, but as lousy as a wrestler as he was, Zeus intrigued me with his look, and nothing can faze him gimmick. I also enjoyed Honky Tonk Man's groggy rant after his match, thinking he was at a concert after Jimmy Hart bashed him with the guitar. The roster was deep here, and this show was a good one. 7 out of 10.
Alan Gaynor. One of the things that struck me when I rewatched this show a few years back is how excited the crowd would get about everything. Mid-carders like Ronnie Garvin and Hercules got bigger reactions than main event talent today do. Maybe it was just because us fans back then were so used to seeing jobber matches that when two names competed against one another, even if that name was the Red Rooster, it meant so much more. Interesting trivia note. Tiny Zeus Lister is the only man to have worked with both Brutus Beefcake and Robert De Niro. At least I think that's true. Maybe I'll find out Honky Tonk Man was in Taxi Driver.
Brian Hillhouse. I'm just trying to think who's worked with...
Who else has worked with Robert De Niro and Brutus Beefcake? Can you tell me? Is there anybody else?
I'm sure there's somebody out there. Maybe, right. Yeah, I don't know. No one's coming to me right now. Brian Hillhouse. I saw SummerSlam 89 live on closed circuit at Maple Leaf Gardens. Going into the show, Brutus Beefcake was my favorite wrestler, but once he joined Hogan in the post-match posing, that was the end. It was a feeling I can only compare to how a young teen feels when their parents do something lame in an attempt to relate with them. Complete deflation.
Hanzi. I remember this event fondly. I remember how pissed off I was I couldn't get pay-per-views around this time frame, followed by the next few years, so I had to go to some video rental place a month or so later where the guy would make a copy of the events for us, and this was one of the first shows I had gotten. It's amazing how much Macho Man was so great with who he was feuding with. He had us convinced Ed Leslie deserved to be in a main event tag team match. I always found it odd that Piper mooning Rick Rude would be such a distraction. It would cause him to lose his IC title. I would be distracted. Absolutely. Dude moon me? If somebody mooned Rashad Evans this weekend from the cage. That'd be totally distracting.
Maybe. They could have had the headline, I see Piper's ass.
Okay.
I see title.
Okay.
Maybe that will happen at UFC.
Somebody will moon one of the fighters.
Nobody's Maybe Jenna there. Jameson will moon Rashad.
Yeah, surprise. No one's done that.
Bill Thigpen. I've seen some matches from SummerSlam 89, and in my opinion, they were awesome. However, what really caught my eye was Zeus. Wasn't he the guy who played Debo in the first two Friday films with Ice Cube? The best part of the pay-per-view, though, was seeing the Macho Man. I always feel some sort of depression now whenever I watch one of his matches. It sucks that he is gone, but it feels good to know that we have that we have old pay-per-views like this to keep his memory alive.
Michael Johnson. The crowd was into that main event and really carried it. It's amazing how much the business has changed, where a tag team main event with no world title match could bring an audience and sell a pay-per-view. That Hogan-Zeus angle was so silly as I look back on it and would never fly today, but that feud was so over at the time. People actually cared about how it turned out. The weekly TV programming was much different in the late 80s, where the top guys rarely wrestled each other on free television, outside of Saturday night's main event, five times a year, so they could book absolute shit for the pay-per-view, but you'd pay to see it, and be happy about it. Lastly, I laughed for a good 5 minutes when Schiavone lost his mind and his voice for Hogan's body slam of Zeus. He brings up a good point, you know, when, despite these seeming like jobber matches, they were in an era where you didn't see many matchups between two name guys.
Yeah, it's true. It was a novelty at that point in time, and I think it made people, I think, appreciate it a lot more. So we're obviously judging it by different standards today. Mark McCreath. The opening video package for this show was amazing. Showing in-ring moves, then people enjoying summertime. The best part was a clothesline followed by a girl laughing while eating a watermelon. This should be the way that WWE do their video packages today, focusing less on the storylines and more on the hilarity of eating fruit. I hadn't seen this event for 20 years, and I really enjoyed watching it again. Best matches for me were Hart Foundation against the Brainbusters and Rude versus Warrior. Don't know why the Brainbusters didn't have entrance music, and why it was a non-title match when the heel champions won anyway. Other things I took from this event were that Dusty Rhodes looked like the world's worst stripogram while wearing the police hat and polka dots. Also that I forgot how brilliant the Rougeau's entrance music was. 6 out of 10.
Atish Singh, who requested this show. I started watching wrestling right after WrestleMania 5, so this pay-per-view is fondly remembered. I recall the Saturday night's main event where Hogan nailed Zeus with the chair only to have the human wrecking machine turn around and smile at him. Hogan's scared facial and Ventura's commenting during that spot always stuck with me. How much of a trip was it to hear Tony Schiavone announcing? Jesse Ventura was in top heel color man form. Love his reaction after the Rick Rude Warrior match. Of course that idiot don't know what to make of it. Ha ha ha. The opening tag match could have been a classic if given more time. The IC title match had great heat and shows. And how about Piper mooning Rude? The main event was lackluster, but I thought the MVP was Sherry. She worked her ass off in that match and was probably one of the hardest working female managers in history. Savage and her had to work with Zeus and carry him through everything. I thought she looked pretty hot too. Most of my friends back then thought I was crazy to think so. Best part was when Hogan picked her up for the atomic drop. I always found Hogan's atomic dropping Sherry to be a fun spot that they did many times. It was great to see her rightfully go into the Hall of Fame in 2006 with my favorite of all time, Bret Hart, right before her passing. We were there for that induction.
Yes, we were. She was great during her induction.
Yes.
Corey Ferreira, nothing special about this SummerSlam. The opening tag match between the Brainbusters and Hart Foundation is a great tag team opener. The Ultimate Warrior and Rick Rude match is also quite good and shows that if with the right guy, Warrior can put on a good performance and Rude was one of those guys. The main event is nothing special, just building off of the recent No Holds Barred movie having Hogan and Zeus, but throwing Savage in the mix because of their feud from the time. Overall, nothing major here, just another show which doesn't have a huge impact in WWF/E history, unlike Canadian Stampede.
Arun Nasralla. I bought a copy of this way back on VHS and watched it several times. The in-ring work wasn't great, but I do remember a lot from this show. Zeus, wasn't he brought back later on in WCW? Rick Rude did a nasty pile driver that I've never seen anyone else do. King Hacksaw Jim Duggan and Smash slamming Akeem. But what I remember the most is how many people were jacked up, like Arvin the MacGyver from Jersey Shore. Anyway, can't wait to hear about it. And if you do continue the SummerSlam reviews, then why not the historical SummerSlam of 92? Are there reasons for WWE not doing pay-per-views overseas anymore? Thanks a lot for your hard work.
Well, the main reason is the time difference. I think they want it to be live. They don't want to be doing pay-per-views on tape delay, nor airing them at, you know, a ridiculous time, like a Sunday afternoon or something, which is what it would be if you were airing it at, say, 8 o'clock in the UK. I mean, you're looking at like 2-3 o'clock here.
That makes sense. Maybe that's part of the hesitation from the UFC as well.
You noticeably see drops when they do tape-delayed pay-per-views, no matter what the lineup is. Terry Small, late 80s and early 90s, WWF was my heyday, and I remember being pumped about Zeus coming in to face Hogan. God, what a dumb kid I was. Huh. I think the reason he was coming in was because Hogan supposedly broke his nose during the filming of No Holds Barred. Seemed reasonable at the time for a 13-year-old me. But in closing, WWE needs to watch their tapes of this time and bring back the tag division and not make it such a joke. As for a future review, there was a pay-per-view in Hamilton about 10 or 12 years ago. The name escapes me now, and the only thing I remember about it was the Hardys were in a dark match. That was Breakdown from 98.
Dave Power. One of the earlier memories I have of wrestling. It's an enjoyable event in a guilty pleasure kind of way. Opening tag match and the IC title match are the highlights. Rude was a fantastic heel and should have gotten more of a main event and run. The main event is pretty terrible. Zeus couldn't even master basic selling when he finally had to fall. Excuse me. One thing though, do all the tag matches have the same ending in this? Ref's back is turned, the cover is broken, and the wrestler making the pin ends up getting pinned, often by the illegal man.
Yeah, so it was a finish they enjoyed on this show. And finally, Trey Davis. I started watching wrestling in 92, but when I was a kid, I would go to the nearest video store and rent the past pay-per-view. I can remember being shocked when Hogan hit Zeus with a chair, and Zeus no-sold it. I had never seen another wrestler no-sell a chair. Even as a kid, though, I remember not really liking this event because I was never a fan of tag team main events. All right, so that was everybody's feedback, and every week you can leave your feedback and comments regarding whatever you would like at reviewaway.com. That's reviewaway.com. And looking ahead to next week, Way, with SummerSlam coming up next week, I thought we'd do one more SummerSlam, and then we'll shelve the SummerSlams for this season. But I wanted to do a more recent one and compare it after watching this 1989 version, and that would be the 2006 show, which features Hulk Hogan's last match with the WWE, where he takes on Randy Orton, as well as John Cena against Edge and King Booker against Batista. This was, of course, they had the infamous fight at the SummerSlam photo shoot and then had to work together at the pay-per-view.
Fantastic.
So, no tag team main event, no Zeus, and probably no tag team match on that show either. So that's coming up next week for show number 101.
The big 101 episode.
Yeah. So, Mr. Ting, on our way out here, just want to remind everyone, Monday night you can catch us live with Review of Raw at reviewaway.com. You can listen live via stick cam, post your comments, give us your thoughts. And then, of course, you can check out Review and Impact every week, Review Away, and The Law. So, Mr. Ting, some music to go out with.
Well, what else can we go out with besides one of the greatest themes in WWF and wrestling history, and that is the All-American Boys by the Fabulous Rougeaus.
All right, that's all for us, everyone. We are out here from Montreal to Memphis.